you, Amy, for having me.
Well, Michelle, you were one of the first 5 staff members who helped create the Aspen Hope Center about 8 years ago. What was it specifically that led you to be a part of the founding of the Aspen Hope Center?
Serendipitous fortune, I guess. I'm very blessed to be able to be with the Hope Center. I'm a lifelong crisis clinician. My entire 20 years of working in the field of psychology has all been surrounding the work in crisis. And when the then Aspen Valley Medical Foundation started the Hope Center, I had been in the Valley 13 days and was asked to be a part of it. So it has been all I've known in this valley, but has given me the great fortune to meet many, many people and really form some strong partnerships, both with interagencies as well as personally.
Well, what kind of crises does the Hope Center handle? I mean, can anyone in an emotional crisis call the center, or do you specifically focus on suicide?
When we started, we really got pigeonholed as a suicide prevention agency. But what we try to let people know is there are so many social and environmental determinants in people's life that push someone to that potential brink of suicide that we deal with every crisis. We do not define the crisis. The person on the other end of the phone defines what is a crisis for them. So it can be suicide, but typically people who end up feeling suicidal, it has to do with relationship falling apart or job changes or financial stress or work stress or children stress or spouse stress, grief and loss. It can be absolutely anything. If it is a crisis to someone, it is a crisis to us. And one of the things we do most is work with 911 and the first responders in the valley, and we show up on scenes of fatalities or hiking deaths or swift water deaths just to be able to give emotional support to the family or loved ones who are on scene. So any definition for crisis is what we will help mediate.
When you talk about suicide in that manner, it sounds like suicide itself is the result of cumulative impacts of life and of various traumas in life, or what a person perceives as a trauma. And it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the work that the Aspen Hope Center does in dealing with all kinds of crises is sort of like suicide prevention.
Absolutely, in every aspect. When we talk about being experts in crisis, we look at the continuum of crisis, and that is everything from prevention, like the classes that we do. There's one being held tonight at 6 p.m. at the Snowmass Chapel, and it's about being aware of what causes suicide and how you as an individual can help prevent someone from taking that step. So we do a lot of prevention, a lot of education. We have a school-based program that is designed to catch kids that are at risk before a crisis would exude. And then we end up doing the response, which is the on-scene. We do intervention, which is the risk assessments. We do crisis stabilization, which is a program that keeps people out of the hospital and here in the community and increases their connection so they can heal without being inpatient. And then our crisis recovery and follow-up is the fact that once lights and sirens dissipate, once a funeral is over, once a divorce is finalized, whatever the situation may be, that doesn't mean that that person is forever going to be happy and everything's fine. They still need to know that there are connections and people they can reach out to, because a crisis can linger inside someone long after the actual event itself is over.
You know, on your website, according to the statistics on your website, most of the clients that you serve are females. And the age groups that call most often are those between ages 15 and 25 and between the ages of 51 and 65. Why those two age groups? What's going on there?
You know, I wish I knew. You know, out here, we hear a lot of people talk about isolation, about superficial relationships, about connectedness, not being what they would hope, would want, would expect. The stories that we hear are very similar. They have a similar thread. I do know that the statistics you find nationwide about the highest rate of suicide being white males, you know, over the age of 65, using a firearm, we don't always find those statistics to be true here. We have a unique valley, and a resort community has different life struggles than a big city has. And so I think you do find some differences. Why females? You know, women tend to seek help more often than men. So I think that's why our numbers of women are higher. They are also the higher gender for suicide attempts versus completions. And so I think that lends to that statistic.
What should people do if they think a loved one is suicidal?
You know, there is no such thing as, we can't help you, I'm sorry. Probably a good third to a half of our phone calls are people calling about someone they're concerned about. For us, the person on the phone is our, quote, client, until the person that they're concerned about can be with us in our presence. So the person on the phone is someone we will spend a great deal of time asking questions of and trying to get details about the loved one or the person that they're concerned about. And then we will say, here's what you can do to approach them. Here's what you can say. Here are the resources you can offer them. And our goal in those conversations is to get that person on the phone or in our office or us in front of them. We can't expect, even in the class that we teach, it's an hour-long class, we would never expect someone to leave that class feeling like they're a mini therapist or crisis clinician, nor would we ever want to put that weight on someone's shoulders to hold another's life in their hands. But to be able to empower them to feel comfortable enough asking some of those difficult questions and looking for the right signs that say something's wrong and knowing, I'm not going to take no for an answer. I'm going to get you the help that you need, and I'm going to go with you, and I'm not going to leave you. Those are the messages we try to send, because the world of mental health is difficult. The system is broken, and we recognize that. So our goal is to teach people how to get someone they're concerned about to a crisis clinician, and when to be concerned, what to look for, and what the signs are that really lead someone to know, I have a concern about this person and it's valid.
What if the suicidal person or the person who's exhibiting maybe some ideations, what if that person refuses help? Then what?
So we get a lot of those, oddly enough. Someone who has depression, for instance, they look through the world through a different lens than we do, and they get angry at themselves that they can't solve this problem. And so when you try to approach some people, sometimes they get angry and they try to push you away. Anger is one of those signs that people will see in someone who may very well be suicidal. We've had people yell at us, scream at us, throw papers across the desk, and 2 days later, once they have, you know, reluctantly signed away to be part of our program because it was their only choice with us not putting them in a hospital for fear of their safety being in jeopardy, you know, 2 days later, they walk through our doors with their head hung so low and tears in their eyes saying, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry for how I treated you. You were just trying to help me. And I don't know what help looks like. We live in a country and a state where we have this kind of pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality. Don't complain. Move on. Do your job. And so people aren't always accustomed, especially men. They're not accustomed to asking for help, and they can get angry. But once they realize what help looks like, they take a step backward and realize it's what saves them.
That's really powerful.
It really is. You should be in our shoes some days, standing face to face with these individuals. We have a tough time. People walk out our doors saying, you've changed my life, you saved my life, and we look at each other and say, I don't think people realize how much they touch our lives every day. It takes a whole lot of courage to bear the most personal parts of your soul to a complete stranger because you are so desperate for help. It is a sign of courage, not weakness. And we are humbled every day that people give us that opportunity to help.
One final question, Michelle Muthing. What do you do to take care of yourself?
We are known to be found sitting outside massage offices. We are known to go on long hikes. A full-time crisis clinician works 3 24-hour shifts, and it's designed that way, like a firefighter, 48 hours on and the rest of the time you're off. It's because we need that time to be out in the fresh air and decompress.
Well, Michelle Muthing, director and co-founder of the Aspen Hope Center, thank you very much.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much, Amy, for helping get the word out. And we hope that people listen and use the number when they need it.
And that's 925-5858.
Correct. And it is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.